Let's go. I start off with this board every single year in Parshas Bamidbar. I shouldn't say I start off with it. This board, I've said every single year, I think for the last 8 years, when I've been giving share this year, this is by far, this is the best board. It's the best board. Parshas Bamidbar, it says, "Vayidaber Hashem Moshe b'Midbar Sinai ba'ol moed b'achol b'chodesh hasheni b'shem hasheni tzotzei sam eretz Mitzrayim leimor." God spoke to Moshe b'Midbar Midbar Sinai, the ol moed, the first of the second month in the second year after they left Mitzrayim, once they left Mitzrayim. So he said like this, count the heads of all the people of Yisrael according to their families, according to their father's houses, the mispar shemos, according to the number of names that they have in each family, kol zachor legugulosim, every male person, every man legugulosim, by their head. This word is said over by Rav Yonis and Eichitz and by Rav Shmuel Kerkover. So Rav Shmuel Kerkover and Rav Yonis and Eichitz both say the exact same thing. Over here, when it says by Bnei Yisrael, it says you count them Ligul Golosim, you count them by heads. Later on in the Parsha, it happens to mention that they count Bnei Levi. And it goes into what it says, they start counting Bnei Levi, and it says by Dabar Hashem, Pekodis Bnei Levi, Levei Savosam, Lemish Bechosam, Kol Zachor, Biben Chodesh Vamala Tivkinei. That's in Perek Gimel Pasuk Tesvav. But it doesn't say the word Ligul Golosim. It doesn't say count them by the head. Why don't we count them by the head? Why do we count Bnei Yisrael by the head, but we don't count Bnei Levi by the head? The word is unbelievable. Chazal say, it's brought down in the Yerushalmi, that a person who is two-headed, who has two heads, cannot live more than 12 months. Cannot live more than 12 months. He'll live for a year, but he won't live longer than that. I do not think that refers to a Siamese twin, because Siamese twins have notoriously been able to live for longer than that. But it happens to be that if you do have a two-headed guy, a regular two-headed guy, according to you, Shalmi, they can't live for more than 12 months. It's impossible for them to live for 12 months. So the pasuk says the following. We count Bnei Yisrael Legul Golosim by the head. Because when do we count Bnei Yisrael? Bnei Yisrael is counted from 20 to the age of 60. From 20 to 60, that's how we count them. So between the ages of 20 and 60, you'll never have a two-headed guy. It's impossible to have a two-headed guy because a two-headed guy is not going to live for more than 12 months. So it'll be okay to count them by head because one guy will be one person, even though he's got, there will never be a two-headed guy. But by Bnei Levi, when do you count them from? Start counting them from 1 month, from 30 days. Which means that if you have a two-headed guy, a two-headed Levi, then it's possible to count him as two. So you can't count him by the head, you have to count him by the body. So it doesn't say the word Legul Golosim by Bnei Levi, it only says Legul Golosim by Bnei Yisrael, that's it. That's the word that's given over by that. Now, there's famous things about two-headed guys. There's tshuvas all over the place. All over the place. We don't have to go into them right now. Just know it's a Gemara Menachos Davlam Zayin Mabez where a bunch of guy went up to Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, said to Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, what happens if you have a two-headed guy, where does he put tefillin at? Which head does he put the tefillin at? What's going on, Eves? How are you? So where does he put the tefillin at? So, it's a crazy question. So Rebbe said to him, Okum Gali, either get up and get out of here, or you're put in the chair. I'm going to excommunicate you. That's what he told him.
If they can't live for 12 months, why is he even asking?
Why is he even asking, right? Why would he bother asking? Adahachi, the Gemara says, as that went on, a father came in and said, my wife just gave birth to a two-headed kid. How much do I give for pinin aben? Do I give 5 shekel kesef for pinin aben or 10 shekel kesef for pinin aben? And the Gemara goes on and says, 10 shekel kesef for pinin aben. Tosfos says, be'olam hazel leka. In this world, a strange lashon of Tosfos, in Olam Hazeh Leka, Avo B'Midrash Yesh. But there is in Medrash. In Medrash, there's such a thing as a two-headed guy. And the Gemara, they quote a Medrash from there. The Medrash is actually quoted by Isis. It's a Medrash about Shlomo Melech who saw a two-headed guy and the guy tried to claim he was two people for inheritance and everything like that, etc., etc. It goes on. It's an unbelievable thing. So either way, just so you know, two-headed people are mentioned somewhere, the Yerushalmi, as well as this Gemara Menachos and Daf Lamed Zayin Amud Beis. Just so you know, it's up there. It's a very, very strange Gemara. And, I think every year around Parshas Bereishis is when I go into all the halachas of two-headed people because of all the Bereishon and everything. But we're not going to do that right now. Number two, I like this a lot. You got to count them, right? We've counted them already. We're going to count them again in Parshas Pinchas. We counted them before earlier. What are we counting them again for? So Rashi says, unbelievable. He says, Mitochi Basim, because he loves them so much, he counts them like your money. And now, I don't know anybody that really does this, like pulls out their wallet, starts counting their money, just like, I just want to make sure you were there. I don't know if you really do that. Anybody that's there? If I was Scrooge McDuck, and I had like a whole place where I was swimming around in coins, coins, you know? Maybe then I keep counting them or something like
that. You check every once in a while.
Okay, checking I can hear, but counting them, I don't take all my keys. One, two, three. I just don't do that. It's just very strange. I've never heard of somebody really counting up his money every other minute just to make sure, like, I just want to make sure you know I love you. You know I love you, right, coin? You know I love you. I never do it. I never do it. I have a change cup in my, you know, a change cup in my house where I always throw my change and everything, you know? I never count it. Like, eventually, like, after a year's up and it's full to the brim, then I go to the bank and I go exchange it. I end up getting $50 back, you know, something like that. That's about it. But aside from that, I don't do anything different. I just don't get it. What does it mean? So some say it's a reminder of what you have, sort of like checking your pocket. You know, you, like, put your hand in your pocket, like what you guys said, you know? Just want to make sure my phone was there. Just want to make sure my keys are there. I understand that. That I can definitely hear. But it doesn't mean you have to go through every single one. He's just like, God could basically, Ke'ilu, he could look down and be like, they're there. Like, and that's it. He doesn't have to go ahead and have them be counted by Moshe Rabbeinu. But the Bialmeloi says it also. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu is not just counting them. Well, but when we say counting, technically you go like this. You go up to, you know, my house, 3127 West Jarvis, and you knock on the door. He's like, excuse me, how many people are in the house? You know, for a census. How many people are in the house? Oh, six. Thank you very much. 3129, how many people are in the house? You should know, by the way, I have people right next door to me. These Indian people. So it's funny, because the parents, the father unfortunately passed away, but the mother has all her kids home, and some of them are married. So in this one house, which is not much bigger than a Georgian, there's like 25 people living in the house. So I would love for the census to come checking on these houses. But regardless, they have like 15 cars. You can never get parking on my street because of it. Regardless, they're not listening. So either way, if you could imagine, like, I would assume that Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron would knock on the door, so just say how many people are here from the age of 20 and 60. 20 to 60, just tell me how much it is. But that's not what they did. The Bialmeloi says all of them lined up, walked by, and handed in a coin. And threw in a coin to Moshe Rabbeinu. A maxis a shekel to Moshe Rabbeinu. And the maxis a shekel went in. No, it went in for the Beis HaMikdash. It went in for the Mishkan. But every single one of them walked by and gave it in. Why'd they have to walk by? Why not give their coin to somebody else? Like, everybody give your money to Josh, and Josh will go in for you, and Josh will do everything for you. You don't have to go by yourself. Because every person that walked by, Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron put their eyes on him and gave him an extra little bracha. And that little bracha made sure that there would be no ayin hara on the person for being counted. Because normally when you count people, you know you're not supposed to count anybody. You go, Shia, Samecha, Varechas, Nachal, Asecha. You don't go, one, two, three. You're not supposed to do that. So Moshe Rabbeinu made sure that even though he was counting them directly, he would say, the reason why I'm counting you this way is because I'm giving you an extra bracha by you passing by me. And that's the reason why it was so much chiba. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give a bracha to Klal Yisrael. He didn't know how to give a bracha to Klal Yisrael directly without doing something through Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu showed them, you know, I'm going to count you. I'm not going to count you the normal census way. I'm not going to have you guys send in your information to me. I'm going to look at you, and I'm going to give you bracha by staring at you, by giving you an extra bracha that way. And that's how I'm going to give you the count. That's how I'm going to make the count. In a bad way, it is an ayin hara. There's an ayin tova as well. Just like there's an ayin hara, which is something that everybody talks about, there's an ayin tova as well. The ayin tova is done by Avraham Avinu. The ayin hara is done by Moshe, by Bilam. The way of doing it, by the way, is you use your left eye for the ayin hara. You close your right eye and you stare at the guy. You only think of terrible things about that guy. That gives an ayin hara. You open your right eye and you think of good things about that person. Then that can give you a good eye, and that can make a person have good things happen to him as opposed to bad things. It's the exact same thing. Just it's not cool talking about the ayin tova. You hear people talking about the ayin tova, you're like, oh, what are you, a geek? Like, come on, the ayin hara is so much cooler because you can kill people with it. You can make things happen with it. You can't think of a video game with like an ayin tova going. It just doesn't work out well. That guy got money from me. It's not going to work. So that's why everybody talks about that. Okay, then the Chumash goes into tons of numbers. Right? It goes through everybody, then Shvat, and then Nesiim and everything. And it goes through how many people were in Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. We have to understand something. We know that all the psukim are needed and they're all necessary. I understand that. I definitely know. We also see that there's discrepancies in between the psukim. There's different words that are written by Reuven that aren't there by Shimon, and by Shimon that aren't there by the other Shvatim. And it's strange. Why do you have those discrepancies? For example, quick example, Legul Golosam, similar to that, by the head, is written again by Reuven. It says Reuven Bechor Yisrael told us in Mishmar Shemos Legul Golosam. Says the word Legul Golosam again. It doesn't have anything to do with two-headed guys, like we said before. It's just another word, legugolosim. Shimon, right afterward, again, it says the word legugolosim. It says the word legugolosim by him. No other shevet has it. Gad, Reuven, Shimon, etc. Nobody else has it. It's only these, I'm sorry, Gad, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, etc. It's only Reuven and Shimon that have that word legugolosim. So why do only they have it? So it goes like this. It's such a hard concept, and I'm going to try to explain this in the best way possible, and I will tell you right now, I'll preface this by saying, I don't fully understand this. I'm trying to get it more and more, and I wrote down like extra notes on the top to help me go through it, but whatever. Every person has certain expectations in this world. Every person has a certain expectation. You have an expectation in this world. Your expectation is based on what your parents gave you. Your expectations normally do not exceed what your parents begot you as. So for example, if you were born into a system where you were a tinok shenishba, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have too much more expectations from you other than you're a tinok shenishba. You're a guy who just doesn't know. If you end up doing more than that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is ecstatic. But he's not necessarily expecting it from you. So when you go up to Shemayim, a guy who barely made himself frum, but at least he keeps Shabbos, may be on a higher level than a guy who was frum his entire life. Because a guy who was frum his entire life, but his father was a great big rabbi, he might have had expectations to be similar to his father. Similar to his father. And when he didn't hit those expectations, when he didn't reach those expectations, he was punished for it. Now, not always is that true also. We understand that sometimes the rabbi's son is not going to end up being like the rabbi, because simply put, you don't always have the time to take care of your kids when you're the rabbi and in charge of a huge community. So again, expectations are based on all things considered, all factors considered. And that's not something that we can understand. I can't go up to somebody and blame him for not doing something, for not coming somewhere, for not going somewhere. If I see a guy who doesn't go to Shacharis in the morning, I can't say, well, that it's that guy's fault. The guy should have come to Shacharis. Maybe the reason why he didn't go is because his father never went to Shacharis. He never was raised to go to Shacharis. The school that he was at forced him to go to Shacharis, and he never liked going to Shacharis. And therefore, whenever I tell him, I want you to go to Shacharis, he's just not used to it. If a guy's late for Minyan, it's the exact same thing. I know nothing about the guy in which the guy maybe should come early. Maybe his father always comes late to Minyan. So why in the world should he be any different from that? Maybe he saw somebody that he really respects, and that person also came late to Minyan. You can't expect too much out of a guy. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu understands that as well. You have to be very careful with it, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu definitely, definitely understands that. Every Shevet stood for something. Reuven stood for something. Shimon stood for something. Yisachar stood for something. Zvulun stood for something. They all stood for something. And their kids also are within those expectations of their fathers. So that's why when we say Legul Golosam, all the point of counting them and separating them to tribes is telling them, you have a special power. Your special power goes into this direction. Whatever your Shevet was, Reuven's whole Shevet, their direction was the direction of Reuven. Whatever Reuven did, they would be like Reuven. Reuven was known as a great Baal Tshuva. So they're going to follow in the ways of Reuven. Shimon also was known as a guy who had a tremendously large Yetzer Hara and tried to overcome it, sometimes succeeded, and sometimes succumbed to it. Sometimes succeeded, sometimes succumbed to it. We know that. Because what did Shimon do? He's the one who took Yosef and threw him in the pit. He's the one that took Yosef and sold him down to Mitzrayim. He's the one that went up against Shechem and destroyed everybody because of Dina. Somebody like that, somebody who's in Shevet Shimon, you can have an expectation of that guy to be angry. You can expect that guy to get angry very quickly, very fast, and to succumb to his Yetzer Hara when it comes down to it. That's an expectation, because that guy's from Shevet Shimon. Now, as times have watered down and the Shvatim intermarried with each other, those expectations have been lowered, and we don't have that anymore. But back then, in the times in the Midbar, they were separated into tribes. They considered it almost like intermarriage if they would marry from one tribe to the other. Nobody married from one tribe to the other. They only stayed within the family. And don't tell me, well, their kids probably had 17 legs. The DNA was different back then. The genetics were a little bit more specialized, and therefore it wasn't as watered down as it is now, and it was better that way. It was better that way. Somehow it was better for them to be able to marry. But that's why Reuven and Shimon had issues more than any other Shevet. All the other Shvatim were great Shvatim, but Reuven and Shimon had major issues. That Reuven sinned with Maisa Bila. Shimon sinned with Znus and with all the other things out there. Reuven and Shimon had problems. problems. So what they needed to do for the kids is, I don't want you to just be like Reuven, to just be like Shimon. I want you guys to go higher than that. So we add on the word Legul Galosam, to go higher, to give you an extra bit of Kedusha. So not only are they like Reuven, not only are the people in Shevet Shimon like Shimon, they should be higher than that and go all the way back to Yaakov Avinu. They should be like Yaakov Avinu. And we add on that extra word by them, as opposed to every other Shevet who didn't need that extra help, who didn't need that extra push like Reuven and Shimon did. Should know, it adds on one extra word by Shimon as well. That word is, it's right here in the Pasuk, in Chaf Beis, the word Pikudov, his numbers. It doesn't say that by any other person around there. Every other number, it doesn't say any other word Pikudov in any other Shevet. Why say that word by Shimon? Poke is to do what? What does Pekod mean? Remember, very good. It's a Pekidas Avon by Shimon. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to tell Shevet Shimon, always remember who you are and remember what you have the power of doing. Remember that you guys have within you the ability to sin very much more than any other Shevet. There's no Shevet like it. That's what Shimon is being told. I understand that every person is different and that everyone's an individual and everything's like that. But we know people are born from their surroundings. You can't expect a guy from Mea Shearim to be like a guy who's born in Northbrook. It's not an expectation. If you see a guy from Northbrook that has large, you know, huge pious all the way down to here with like a massive black hat and sitting with a, you know, with a strimal and everything, sitting and learning, that's like, oh my gosh, you're from Northbrook? If you see a guy from Mea Shearim like that, he's like, oh my gosh, aren't you supposed to ask me for money? Like, it's just a different expectation that you have of different people based on where they're from. It's just a simple expectation. Shimon should know, Pikudov, you have poking avon avos upon you. You have the problem that your fathers had, even though we're not going to punish you for it, it's very likely you're going to fall to that. And watch out, Pikudov. Should know, by the way. Anybody know the number that Shimon had? I'll be extremely impressed if you know. The numbers that they had? No, 59,300 people from Shimon. 59,300. Quick gematria. 59 is what in gematria? Nun tes. 300 is what? Sin. Sin tes nun is what? The satan. The satan is with Shimon. His number represents the satan. Shimon's number is representative of the satan. He knew the satan was with him. And by the way, it's the same gematria as Shin. Shin tes yud mem, the place where Shevet Shimon sinned and lost 24,000 people and their nasi Shlumia ben Suri Shadoi, who is Zimri. Shitim is within their name. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that was there. And he forewarned them, Pikudov, Shimon, watch out. You're the Shevet that has to watch out more than anybody else. Nobody else is going to sin in Shitim like you will. You guys are going down. Shevet Shimon was supposed to have intermarriages with the Erev Rav. They married in with the Erev Rav. They were the ones who had connections with the Erev Rav because they were part of that. They understood what it meant to be all the way down. They were the people who were into that sort of a thing. It was a problem. Shimon was like that. That's the idea behind that. And later on by the Degalim, it says other things as well. By the Degalim, when it goes into how they camped and they were this way and that way and everything. By the first Degel, Degel Yehuda, there was Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zvulun. It's interesting. By Yehuda, it doesn't say it. It says by Yisachar, Zvulun, and Reuven, it says an extra word, Ufgudav. Once again, that word, Pikudav, is mentioned by Yisachar, Zvulun, and Reuven. Why? Why by them over anybody else? Because again, these people have the greatest job in all of Klal Yisrael. The greatest job that you can possibly imagine. Think of what these people stood for. Reuven, we know about already. Reuven is the Bechor. I know that Yosef got the Bechor because I'm an Asher Nafayim, but Lamaisa, the Pasuk starts off, Reuven Bechor Yisrael. Reuven is the Bechor. He's the firstborn in that, but thereby, as all firstborns are. By the way, how many people here are firstborns? Are Bechors?
Son is.
No. That's not what I asked. Two? We just got two?
Gosh,
we got three. We only got three firstborns. That's interesting, by the way. How many people do we have right now? Okay. Well, it's going to come into play later on. Okay. Either way, Reuven was the Bechor of Yisrael. He's the role model for everybody else. He's the role model. Everybody looks up to Reuven. That's why Reuven said, when they were trying to sell down, when they're trying to bring down Binyamin, Reuven stood up and said, I'll do anything, Yaakov. Let me bring down Binyamin. When Reuven saw they were going to kill Yosef, he stood up and said, what's my father going to say to me? He's going to say, Reuven, you're the Bechor. Why didn't you stop him? Because a Bechor is the guy who's supposed to be in charge. He's supposed to be the guy who's supposed to be the role model telling everybody else what to do. Not always is it like it. Not always is it like that way. Hopefully the Bechor is the guy who can do it. But the Bechor is supposed to be the guy who's supposed to be in taking charge, making sure that everything's going correctly. Reuven's the Baal Tshuva. Look at this. What's Reuven's numbers? Reuven's Rebbe's number is 46,500. 46. Gematria?
Membov.
Membov. 500. This is hard. This is hard. But what is 500? It's machlokis about it. Menatzbach are the extra letters that are added on at the end of the whole alphabet, of the alphabet, the Aleph Tuf. Tuf is 400. According to Menatzbach, Chaf Sofis according to some, others say it's a Mem Sofis, as in Mum. That Reuven stood for Mum. He stood for the blemish. He saw blemishes in himself, and he spent his entire life working on himself to get rid of those blemishes, to get rid of that Mum that was within him. He saw a Mum and tried to fix it up. He was the definition of a Baal Tshuva, a guy who realized that he had done something wrong and wanted to improve on himself. And I always hate that term, Baal Tshuva, and the way it's used now, as like a guy who wasn't from and became from, and we call him a Baal Tshuva. It's not true. It's not true. That guy's probably a BA. He's not a BT. A BA is a born again. Sometimes those are the born agains. You know, the born. Okay, we won't get into that right now. A BT, a Baal Tshuva is everybody. I remember calling somebody, oh, so you're a Baal Tshuva, right? The guy was insulted beyond belief. What do you mean? I've been from my whole life. I'm like, you don't do tshuva? Like, that's it? When you're from your whole life, you don't do tshuva? It's impossible? You can't call yourself a Baal Tshuva? What are you, an apikoris? So then he could do tshuva. But it boggles the mind that we consider a Baal Tshuva only that guy who became from after not being from at all. That's not the proper use of the term. Reuven was a guy who was a Baal Tshuva, who kept trying to improve on himself, saw the bad things, and he didn't keep trying to improve upon himself. That guy needs a pikudov. All his kids got to keep looking at themselves and say, do I have something wrong with me? I got to check myself out. Yisachar and Zebulun, their jobs in life were the greatest job that all Bnei Yisrael could have. Yisachar were the people who learned all day. Zebulun were the guys who went in and paid for them to learn all day. There's nothing like these people. Absolutely nothing like these people. A guy who goes ahead and sits down and dedicates his entire life to Torah, while Zebulun goes ahead and does business and can't learn, but is willing to give half of his earnings, not 10%, not 20%. Yisachar Zebulun relationship is half of your earnings go to the Yisachar. These guys are the most special people of all time. Not a guy who sits there and says, it's my money, I'll decide what I want to do with it. I want to give 10% to Zucker, 20% to Zucker. It's a guy who says, I know it's not my money, but this is my job in life. I'm taking 50% for myself, 50% to the guy who's learning. That's an unbelievable Yisachar Zebulun relationship. That type, those two types of guys also got to remember, it's very easy to go down. It's very easy for the Yisachar to battle in his learning and to lose out in the schar that he's getting for Zebulun. He's not working for himself, Yisachar. When he's learning not only for himself, for Zebulun. Did Zebulun give you permission to battle? Did Zebulun give you permission to go ahead and take a vacation? Did Zebulun do anything like that? Zebulun, do you know how hard it is to get 50% of your earnings, or even 20%, 10%? Does everybody here have a Meisor account where they're putting the money in the bank and automatically 10% goes out? Do you know how hard it is to sit at the end of the month to say, all right, I just got $5,000, $500 goes straight to tzedakah? How many people are like, I need this money this month. I'll do it next month. And then the next month comes along. I'll just keep adding. Then at the end of the year, they're like, give a check for, you know, $300, and that'll count for my Meisor for the year. They didn't really count it up, but it's hard. I don't blame them. How in the world could they think, how can I get Meisor? I need it for this, I need it for that. I gotta pay for tutoring, I gotta pay for this, I gotta pay for that. There's so many things that are out there. How can I do it? Yisachar and Zebulun have the hardest jobs in the world for that. They get an extra word, pikudov. Know who you are, and know that it's hard, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu realizes that, but that doesn't mean you're free from doing it. You guys are born from Yisachar and Zebulun because you had the best chance of being these types of people. So try your hardest. Again, it's watered down nowadays. It's unfortunate. We don't have that type of thing nowadays. Hopefully we'll eventually be able to get back to that type of a point. By the way, Yisachar, it's unbelievable, these numbers. Yisachar, anybody know their number? Okay, 54,000. 54,000 is actually 54,400. We're not going to go into the 400 right now. That's another thing. There's some soap on the 400. 54,054, Kamatra Nun Dalit, as in done. Because Yisachar judged Klal Yisrael with their Shoftim. They were the Shoftim. They were the judges of Klal Yisrael. Zebulun was 57,000. 57 is the Gematria of Zun. Because he was Mezane Klal Yisrael. He gave Mezonos to Klal Yisrael. He gave the Zun over to Klal Yisrael. Unbelievable. Each one of the numbers represents what the Shevet represented. Each one of the numbers shows you what these people were. It's not just Stam. It's not just Stam at all. absolutely unbelievable thing. Okay, very quickly. The flags. The flags. I love this word. So Bnei Yisrael are sitting at Har Sinai. They're looking up at Shemayim, and they see the Malachim sitting up there. See the Malachim up there? And they're each holding flags. Every Malach was holding a flag. And Bnei Yisrael sat there and they're like, I want to have a flag. Why can't we have flags? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I see you want flags. Everybody's going to get a flag. And there, everybody over here got a flag over here. Wow. Was this third grade? Like, honestly, they looked at the Malach and they're like, yeah, I want a flag. I'll be honest. Simchat Torah, there are times where I sit there and I'm just like, I want a flag. There are times when I'm looking at all the kids running around with flags and I'm just like, give me that. And like grab it away from them, like wave it around a little bit and just give it right back to them. There is a desire in me for a little bit of a flag. But everybody in Klal Yisrael was sitting there and looking at that and just like, wow, that's cool. Wow, I wish I had a flag. What is up with flags? Why flags? The answer is like this. Every malach had on their flag what they were the malach of. You were a malach of a blade of grass? On that flag, you got a picture of a blade of grass. You were a malach of a couch? On the picture, on the flag, you got a picture of a couch. You're a malach of a piece of bread. See, you got a picture of a piece of bread. And that was what the malach was. Each one of them showed what they were. They knew exactly what they stood for. It was like those guys who go out to war and they wear like animals on their chest. Like, I'm as strong as a lion, strong as a sheep, whatever. You know, all those, whatever it is, they have those things representing who they were. Bnei Yisrael said, I want to know what my tafkid in life is. How come I can't know what my tafkid in life is? So I want to know. I want to have a flag just like the malachim do. Just like the malachim know exactly what they're supposed to do, who they're supposed to vote for, what they're supposed to do in life and everything. They know what they're supposed to do from the beginning of time. I want to do that as well. So Kadosh Baruch Hu said, listen, I can't tell each person their tafkid in life. That'll make it too easy and everybody will get Olam Haba, and that's not the challenge of life. That's for other Marishon before the Chait. That's not a Marishon after the Chait. I can't give you that. You guys have to work on yourselves and figure out your tachlis on your own. But you know what I will do? I'll tell you where you represent within Klal Yisrael. What you could do in Klal Yisrael. And that was the idea behind what we were saying with the numbers and everything like that. Their flags represented who they were. Let's go through it very quickly. I'd never done this outright before, but let's say it. Yehuda, we all know, a lion. Yehuda was strong. Leaders, people that could lead Klal Yisrael. By the way, okay, we'll get to that in a second. Yisachar was a sun in a moon. A sun in the moon. Other people say there were other things on top of there, the Torah, a tent, whatever it was. But the sun and the moon, the reason why they had the sun and the moon is because Yisachar were the people who were going into the molots, checking out when the sun and the moon were going to rise and set. They were the ones who were able to paskin shilas. They were able to figure that out, so they had on their chest a sun and the moon. They had on their flag a sun and the moon to represent what they were. Zvulun was a boat for the Torah, the merchandise that they did, going around all of Europe trying to do all the merchandise to be able to bring money back. All three of them represented by one big flag in front of their degel, which was a degel of a lion. All three of them are leaders of Klal Yisrael, Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zvulun, and they were represented by the Malach and Shemayim Gavriel. Gavriel. Then came Reuven. Reuven had mandrakes. Anybody know what mandrakes look like? If anybody's read Harry Potter, you do know what mandrakes look like. What? Very good. Very good. You've read Harry Potter. Thank you. Either way, it's supposed to be a plant that looks exactly like a person. It happens to be it doesn't really look like a person. You can see it. The plant itself, the mandrake, is a type of a vegetable bulb. And the bulb looks like a head. And down at the roots, look like it goes down, there's like one thick root, and then it splits off into two legs. And there's two arms up on top. So it looks like a person. So it's known as an Adam. So what it always was known as is that if you pull out a mandrake when it's, you know, when it's not fully ripened, they scream. And anybody who's around it at the time when you pull it out will die. So that's why they always used to get donkeys to pull out the mandrakes. And they used to get the donkeys to pull them out, then the donkeys would die and they'd be able to take the mandrakes. But apparently it was a very good skula for childbirth, to be able to give birth to children. And that's what Reuben pulled out of the ground and gave over to his mother Leah. Leah traded it to Rachel in order to be with Yaakov Avinu. She had Yisachar that night, and Rachel, when she was together with Yaakov later on, ended up giving birth to Yosef. So tremendous things from these mandrakes. So we had a picture of them, of some type of an Adam that was represented by the plant, the mandrake. This type of a plant that was out there. Shimon was Shechem. Shimon was Shechem. It had on him the anger that he can get into. That if somebody gets him angry, he's like that guy that you always want around when, like, he's like the Incredible Hulk. Now that it's coming out and Rafi told me all about it. He's the Incredible Hulk. That, you know, like when he gets angry, just get the heck away from Shimon. Just get as far away as you can. You don't want to go anywhere near him. He's like, we all know the Medrash from Parshas Vayechi, not Parshas Vayigash, I'm sorry, what we said over. Shimon just said, like, do you want me to kill all of you right now when he was down in Mitzrayim and they were taken away Binyamin? Shimon just stood there, like, Yehuda, I'll take care of them all right now. I'll just kill all of Mitzrayim right now. Shimon is that guy who's just like flicking people around and killing everything, like knocking them against walls, like throwing them all down, stepping on them, you know? Killing a city full of 24,000 people, I'm assuming was not that easy. But Shimon was just like, I'm fine. You know, like crushing them together, knocking their heads against each other. That was Shimon. Gad had armies on him. Because Gad also was a very strong person, but he worked together. He's a very big guy in Achdus. Getting the armies together and a very good strategist. A guy who had strategies. They were all represented by a man in their big degel, and the Michoel was their Malach in front. Ephraim was an axe. Menashe was a Re'im. Anybody know what a Re'im is? So if you look at the windows in Yeshurun, on top of the Aron Kodesh, the painted windows which were made by Temple Beth-El in 1973, my great-grandfather-in-law, sort of. It's a long story. Either way, not really related to me at all. You know what it is, Grandpa Bernstein. Either way, regardless, he told me that he asked the rabbi, and the rabbi has on there, there's a picture of a unicorn. And the reason for the unicorn is because it represents the Re'im of Menashe. Nobody knows what Re'im is. It could be a rhinoceros, it could be a muskox, it could be a buffalo, but for those people who like it, it's a unicorn. It's a unicorn. Yeah, the shore. No, it's a shore right behind it, which is supposed to be a Ephraim. And in Menashe, it's supposed to be the Re'im, which is a unicorn right in front of it. That's what it's supposed to be. It's just messed up, though. I don't think they had any clue. Stonehenge. Yeah, that is Stonehenge.
Are you serious?
He said, yeah, it's Stonehenge. He asked, it's Stonehenge. They have Stonehenge up there. Pictures of the Shvatim and Stonehenge. A mathematical equation. Stupid reform idiots. I shouldn't say reform rabbi idiots that decide to come up with these things. Stonehenge! And it's
Shahol. They thought it was all the rocks that Moshe Rabbeinu put down after he took them.
That's not what they thought. They thought, oh, it's a spiritual thing. Stupid idiots. All right, anyway, it was a stupid mathematical astronomical thing. It just had a huge thing in National Geographic 4 months ago on it. Anyway, Binyamin, the last one, had a wolf. He had a wolf on him. He was a wolf because we all know about Binyamin. And when we eventually can say the word when Mashiach comes and everybody will understand it, we'll stop with that. The representation of all of them was a shore. And the Malach was Rephael. The final thing we have is Dun Usher and Naphtali. Dun was a snake slash eagle. I saw an unbelievable Balaturim. The notes of the Balaturim said from the Ibn Ezra that it was a snake with wings of an eagle. That's pretty cool. That's a dragon, my friend. That's a really cool dragon. It's like a worm. That's like the definition. I've never heard anything cooler in my life. What? Yeah, and it had a face of an eagle. A face of an eagle also. So the body of a snake, the face of an eagle, and the wings of an eagle. I can't imagine what that's like, but I don't know why Dun had that over anything else. Nesher is supposed to be famous. Okay, regardless. That was Dun. Usher had an olive tree because of the beauty and etc. Naphtali had a deer. That's right. Beauty of the deer. We can all understand Tzvi's. Okay, regardless. That's that. All of them were represented by a Nesher, by an eagle all the way up on top, thanks for the path. Anyway, that was Nesher, and Uriel was their Malach to light up where they were within the darkness. Shano, the Levim were 22,000. It's just unbelievable. Shano, the representation of Malachim and Shemayim, there's supposed to be however many people they had down here, that's how many Malachim were in their cast. So in other words, Michal's group had however many were in Reuven, Shimon, and Gad. Gabriel's group up there in Shemayim with all the Malachim was the same number as Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zvulun, etc. Why? Unbelievable thing. Because putting them together, you take Olam Hazeh, all the people down here, and the Malachim up there in Shemayim, and you put them together, it makes the full shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu seem clearer to people. People look and say, oh, I can see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world. It clearly puts them both together. That's the idea behind it. So what they say is like this. It really works out well. Each Shevet had somebody represented by them. In the beginning, that was a Nasi, right? There are four people that are mentioned among all the names over here that have the name El at the end of their names. Those people are number 2, Shimon, Shmumi El Ben Suri Shadoi. Number 5, Zvulun, Yisachar. Number 5, Yisachar, Nisan El Ben Suor. Number 8 was it Asher, Pagiel Ben Achron. And then there's number 11 was Menashe Gamliel Ben Pedatzur. So why those numbers? Why was it written in that order? Why was it that thing that was number 2, 5, 8, and 11? Add them all together. 11 plus 8 is 19. Plus 5, 24. Plus 2 is 26. So because of that, all Malachim we know end with El, Michael, Raphael, Gabriel, Uriel. These were the people that represented those Malachim that showed as if the Malachim were there. Add them both together and you come out with Shem Avaya. You come out with 26 with the Shem of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because putting them together, Olamazim and Olamavah together, gets them to be like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, we're going to end with one little thing over here. Ben Ish Chai quotes in his description. I wanted to go into a whole thing about why we... You know what? Let's do this instead. Here's a little bit of Kabbalah while we can end over here. Another round of you. Check out Pasuk Perek Gimel Pasuk Aleph. Perek Gimel Pasuk Aleph. You look inside. It says, "Ela told us Aaron and Moshe beyond Divrei Hashem is Moshe Bar Sinai." These are the generations of Aaron and Moshe when Hashem spoke to Moshe and Sinai. The Ela Shmos Bnei Aaron. These are the sons of the names of the sons of Aaron. Habachor Nadav Aviu Elazar V'Itamar. Nadav and Aviv. Are we in denial?
They're dead.
Why are we bringing them up? They're gone. And it says Habechor Nadav Aviu. Why are we mentioning Nadav and Aviu if they're not here anymore? Why are we bringing them up? There's no one else that we mention that's dead. No one else that we bring into. We're going into numbers here. Why are we counting them? So listen to this. So there's answers. Yeah, it's because Nadav and Aviu were such big tzaddikim. Yeah, because the Ramban answers, the Rabbeinu Bachai answers it. They were so great tzaddikim, everything like that. I saw this. The Chassam Sofer has an answer as well. The notes of the Rabbeinu Bachai says the following. Why did Nadav and Aviu die? One of the answers is because they never got married and they never had children. So how does this work exactly? It goes like this. There's a concept in the Torah called Yibam. How does Yibam work? A guy gets married to a woman. If he doesn't end up having children, then what happens? He dies. So what happens to his wife? His brother from his father's family goes ahead and takes her as a wife and does Yibum to her. Does Yibum. Marries her and has a child, and they name that child after the dead brother. They name the child after the dead brother. That's what Yibum is. Yibum is marrying the brother's wife. Your brother that just died, his wife. That's what Yibum is supposed to be in order to propagate your brother's remembrance inside this world. What's the sod behind that? So there's something called soda ibra. The pshat is like this. If a person doesn't have children in this world, he doesn't have a way of progenating, of going on and having children, of continuing himself in this world, his neshama never feels complete. So his neshama feels lost and can't find any rest and can't go up to Olam Haba until he goes into a Gilgal, until he comes back through somebody else. And by doing so, he's able to come back as himself and then eventually get himself back up to Shemaim. He's got to fix up his chait, basically, by not having any children. So Soda Ibra, the way it goes is, normally Yibum works. By doing Yibum, what you're doing is the following. You're going ahead and you're allowing the children, your children, or the children that are going to be born, to take on your role, because it's your name and your everything, so your neshama can then go up to Shemaim. Nothing of an Aviu never got married. They never got married, so therefore what happens to them? No wives. Which means their neshamas couldn't go back up to Shemayim. Which means for all intents and purposes, their neshamas are still here, down here on earth. They never left. Their bodies are gone. Their bodies are dead. But the neshamas are still here on earth and don't go anywhere. They're still around, flying around as spirits, so to speak, that are living inside this world, because there's no way for them to fix up their sin. There's no way for them to get rid of that problem that they're never going to have a way of propagating in the world. Until they can find somebody who HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows them to enter, to go in, and let them be able to fulfill their promise. And that's exactly what happened. When Pinchas went and killed Zimri, he had a lot of help. The help was given, says the Zohar, from Nadav and Aviv. Nadav and Aviv's neshamos, which were hanging around, waiting down here on earth, went into Pinchas and gave him the strength to become a Kanoi, to go up against Zimri and Cusbi and kill them. And go up to them and kill them. That's what gave Pinchas the strength to do that. And they stayed with Pinchas until Pinchas had children. And then after Pinchas had children, they left and went back up to Shemayim, and they fulfilled their tachlis in life. They fulfilled that tafkid. But until that point, they were still around. They were still alive. So it says the notes of the Rabbeinu Bachaya, that's why they're mentioned here. Because none of them may have died physically, but they never died spiritually. They're here. They're right here. And therefore, they're mentioned in the Parsha specifically because they never left. They're they're not going to leave until they entered Pinchas, and that's why Pinchas is known as Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, because not only was Pinchas ben Elazar, he was also a ben Aaron as well, because it wasn't only Pinchas doing it, it was Nadav and Avihu who were the sons of Aaron. It was Pinchas and Nadav and Avihu, so he's ben Elazar and ben Aaron HaKohen, and that's what they're doing over here, and that's why they're mentioned in this week's parsha. Alright guys, we're going to stop with that. That's a little bit of Kabbalah, the least amount that we can do, but at least something that we can somewhat, you know, get into. And when we get to Yibam Parshat Kisetei, maybe we'll explain that a little bit further, what the idea is behind having children and going on inside this world. Having